Chapter 28. Render you invisible, beautiful, or 10 times more hideous even than you are, extends only to others, not to you. You may look 1,000 times in the glass, and you will only see those deformed limbs and disgusting features with which devilish malice has disguised you. Poor little Poinsinet looked, and came back in tears. "Ut," resumed the magician, ha, I know a way in which to disappoint the machinations of these fiendish magi. Oh, my benefactor, my great master! For heaven's sake tell it!" gasped Poinsinet. "Look you, it is this. A prey to enchantment and demoniac art all your life long, you have lived until your present age perfectly satisfied. Nay, absolutely vain of a person the most singularly hideous that ever walked the earth." "Is it?" whispered Poinsinet. "'Deed and indeed I didn't think it so bad." "He acknowledges it, he acknowledges it," roared the magician. "Wretch, dotard, owl, mole, miserable buzzard. I have no reason to tell thee now that thy form is monstrous, that children cry, that cowards turn pale, that teeming matrons shudder to behold it. It is not thy fault that thou art thus ungainly. But wherefore so blind? Wherefore so conceited of thyself? I tell thee, Poinsinet, that over every fresh instance of thy vanity the hostile enchanters rejoice and triumph. As long as thou art blindly satisfied with thyself, as long as thou pretendest, in thy present odious shape, to win the love of aught above a negress, nay, further still, until thou hast learned to regard that face, as others do, with the most intolerable horror and disgust, to abuse it when thou seest it, to despise it, in short, and treat that miserable disguise in which the enchanters have wrapped thee with the strongest hatred and scorn, so long art thou destined to wear it. Such speeches as these, continually repeated, caused Poinsinet to be fully convinced of his ugliness. He used to go about in companies, and take every opportunity of inveighing against himself. He made verses and epigrams against himself. He talked about that dwarf, Poinsinet, that buffoon, Poinsinet semicolon that conceited, humpbacked Poinsinet. And he would spend hours before the glass, abusing his own face as he saw it reflected there, and vowing that he grew handsomer at every fresh epithet that he uttered. Of course the wax, from time to time, used to give him every possible encouragement, and declared that since this exercise, his person was amazingly improved. The ladies, too, began to be so excessively fond of him, that the little fellow was obliged to caution them at last for the good, as he said, of society. He recommended them to draw lots, for he could not gratify them all, but promised when his metamorphosis was complete, that the one chosen should become the happy Mrs. Poinsinet, or, to speak more correctly, Mrs. Polycart. I am sorry to say, however, that, on the score of gallantry, Poinsinet was never quite convinced of the hideousness of his appearance. He had a number of adventures, accordingly, with the ladies, but strange to say, the husbands or fathers were always interrupting him. On one occasion he was made to pass the night in a slipper bath full of water, where, although he had all his clothes on, he declared that he nearly caught his death of cold. Another night, in revenge, the poor fellow, and la simple apparel d'un boat, qu'un vient derrière au sommeil, spent a number of hours contemplating the beauty of the moon on the tiles. These adventures are pretty numerous in the memoirs of M. Poinsinet, but the fact is, that people in France were a great deal more philosophical in those days than the English are now, so that Poinsinet's loves must be passed over, as not being to our taste. His magician was a great diver, and told Poinsinet the most wonderful tales of his 2 minutes' absence underwater. These 2 minutes, he said, lasted through a year, at least, which he spent in the company of a naiad, more beautiful than Venus, in a palace more splendid than even Versailles. Fired by the description, Poinsinet used to dip, and dip, but he never was known to make any mermaid acquaintances, although he fully believed that one day he should find such. The invisible joke was brought to an end by points in its too great reliance on it. For being, as we have said, of a very tender and sanguine disposition, he one day fell in love with a lady in whose company he dined, and whom he actually proposed to embrace. But the fair lady, in the hurry of the moment, forgot to act up to the joke, and instead of receiving points in its salute with calmness, grew indignant, called him an impudent little scoundrel, and lent him a sound box on the ear. With this slap the invisibility of points in it disappeared, the gnomes and genii left him, and he settled down into common life again, and was hoaxed only by vulgar means. A vast number of pages might be filled with narratives of the tricks that were played upon him, but they resemble each other a good deal, as may be imagined, and the chief point remarkable about them is the wondrous faith of points in it. After being introduced to the Prussian ambassador at the Tuileries, he was presented to the Turkish envoy at the Place Vendôme, who received him in state, surrounded by the officers of his establishment, all dressed in the smartest dresses that the wardrobe of the Opera Comique could furnish. As the greatest honor that could be done to him, points in it was invited to eat, and a tray was produced, on which was a delicate dish prepared in the Turkish manner. This consisted of a reasonable quantity of mustard, salt, cinnamon, and ginger, nutmegs and cloves, with a couple of tablespoonfuls of cayenne pepper, to give the whole a flavor, and points in its countenance may be imagined, when he introduced into his mouth a quantity of this exquisite compound. The best of the joke was, says the author who records, so many of the pitiless tricks practiced upon poor points in it, that the little man used to laugh at them afterwards himself with perfect good humor, and lived in the daily hope that, from being the sufferer, he should become the agent in these hoaxes, and do to others as he had been done by. Passing, therefore, one day, on the Pont Neuf, with a friend, who had been one of the greatest performers, the latter said to him, points in it, my good fellow, thou hast suffered enough, and thy sufferings have made thee so wise and cunning, that thou art worthy of entering among the initiated, and hoaxing in thy turn. Points in it was charmed. He asked when he should be initiated, and how. It was told him that a moment would suffice, and that the ceremony might be performed on the spot. At this news, and according to order, points in it flung himself straightway on his knees in the kennel, and the other, drawing his sword, solemnly initiated him into the sacred order of jokers. From that day the little man believed himself received into the society, and to this having brought him, let us bid him a respectful adieu. The Devil's Wager. It was the hour of the night, when there be none stirring save churchyard ghosts, when all doors are closed except the gates of graves, and all eyes shut, but the eyes of wicked men. When there is no sound on the earth except the ticking of the grasshopper, or the croaking of obscene frogs in the pool. And no light except that of the blinking stars, and the wicked, and devilish wills o' the wisp, as they gamble among the marshes, and lead good men astray. When there is nothing moving in heaven except the owl, as he flappeth along lazily, or the magician, as he rides on his infernal broomstick, whistling through the air like the arrows of a Yorkshire archer. It was at this hour, namely, at 12 o'clock of the night, that two beings went winging through the black clouds, and holding converse with each other. Now the first was Mercurius, the messenger, not of gods, as the heathens feigned, but of demons. And the second, with whom he held company, was the soul of Sir Roger de Rollo, the brave knight. Sir Roger was Count of Chalchigny, in Champagne, Seigneur of Santer, Villeserf, and Alterlieu. But the great die as well as the humble, and nothing remained of brave Roger now, but his coffin and his deathless soul. And Mercurius, in order to keep fast the soul, his companion, had bound him round the neck with his tail, which, when the soul was stubborn, he would draw so tight, as to strangle him well nigh, sticking into him the barbed point thereof, whereat the poor soul, Sir Rollo, would groan and roar lustily. Now they two had come together from the gates of Purgatory, being bound to those regions of fire and flame, where poor sinners fry and roast in saecula saeculorum. It is hard, said the poor Sir Rollo, as they went gliding through the clouds, that I should thus be condemned forever, and all for want of a single ave. How, Sir Soul? Said the demon. Who were on earth so wicked, that not one, or a million of aves, could suffice to keep from hell flame a creature like thee? But cheer up and be merry, thou wilt be but a subject of our Lord the Devil, as am I, and, perhaps, thou wilt be advanced to posts of honor, as am I also. And to show his authority, he lashed with his tail the ribs of the wretched Rollo. Nevertheless, sinner as I am, one more ave would have saved me, for my sister, who was abbess of St. Mary of Chalchigny, did so prevail, by her prayer and good works, for my lost and wretched soul, that every day I felt the pains of purgatory decrease. The pitchforks which, on my first entry, had never ceased to vex and torment my poor carcass, were now not applied above once a week. The roasting had ceased, the boiling had discontinued. Only a certain warmth was kept up, to remind me of my situation. A gentle stew, said the demon. Yea, truly, I was but in a stew, and all from the effects of the prayers of my blessed sister. But yesterday, he who watched me in purgatory told me, that yet another prayer from my sister, and my bonds should be unloosed, and I, who am now a devil, should have been a blessed angel. And the other ave? Said the demon. She died, sir, my sister died, death choked her in the middle of the prayer. And hereat the wretched spirit began to weep and whine piteously, his salt tears falling over his beard, and scalding the tail of Mercurius the devil. It is, in truth, a hard case, said the demon, but I know of no remedy save patience, and for that you will have an excellent opportunity in your lodgings below. But I have relations, said the earl, my kinsman Randall, who has inherited my lands, will he not say a prayer for his uncle? Thou didst hate and oppress him when living. It is true, but an ave is not much. His sister, my niece, Matilda, you shut her in a convent, and hanged her lover. Had I not reason? Besides, has she not others? A dozen, without doubt. And my brother, the prior? A leech subject of my lord the devil. He never opens his mouth, except to utter an oath, or to swallow a cup of wine. And yet, if but one of these would, but say an ave for me, I should be saved. Aves with them are rare aves, replied Mercurius, wagging his tail right waggishly. And, what is more, I will lay thee any wager, that not one of these will say a prayer to save thee. I would wager willingly, responded he of Chalchigny, but what is a poor soul like me to stake? Every evening, after the day's roasting, my lord Satan giveth a cup of cold water to his servants. I will bet thee thy water for a year, that none of the three will pray for thee. Done, said Rollo. Done, said the demon. And here, if I mistake not, is thy castle of Chalchigny. Indeed, it was true. The soul, on looking down, perceived the tall towers, the courts, the stables, and the fair gardens of the castle. Although it was past midnight, there was a blaze of light in the banqueting hall, and a lamp burning in the open window of the Lady Matilda. With whom shall we begin? Said the demon colon with the baron or the lady. With the lady, if you will. Be it so, her window is open, let us enter. So they descended, and entered silently into Matilda's chamber. The young lady's eyes were fixed so intently on a little clock, that it was no wonder that she did not perceive the entrance of her two visitors. Her fair cheek rested on her white arm, and her white arm on the cushion of a great chair in which she sat, pleasantly supported by sweet thoughts and swan's down. A lute was at her side, and a book of prayers lay under the table, for piety is always modest. Like the amorous Alexander, she sighed and looked at the clock, and sighed for 10 minutes or more, when she softly breathed the word, Dward. At this the soul of the baron was wroth. He jades at her old pranks, said he to the devil, and then addressing Matilda colon, I pray thee, sweet niece, Turn thy thoughts for a moment from that villainous page, Edward, and give them to thine affectionate uncle. When she heard the voice, and saw the awful apparition of her uncle for a year's sojourn in purgatory had not increased the comeliness of his appearance, she started, screamed, and of course fainted. But the devil Mercurius soon restored her to herself. "Hats o'clock," said she, as soon as he had recovered from her fit. "Colon, is he come? Not thy lover, Maud, but thine uncle, that is, his soul. For the love of heaven, listen to me. I have been frying in purgatory for a year past, and should have been in heaven, but for the want of a single ave. I will say it for thee tomorrow, uncle. Tonight, or never." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.